You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, now available on iTunes. Hit the subscribe button and never miss an episode. We are also available on Audio Boom and Mixcloud, while Android users can find us on Pocket Casts and Podcast Republic. Enjoy the show and thanks for listening.
You're all very welcome to episode 16 of Between the Stripes League of Ireland podcast. A week off, folks, after our trip to Wales, a huge win for Ireland. Still getting over it, that result, absolutely amazing stuff. But we have another massive show for you this week. We're going to speak to two men, between them, five League of Ireland titles. A bit of a Shelburne effect on this week's show. It's former Shelburne manager and former Longford Town assistant manager, as well as a player with both clubs, Kevin Doherty. And we also speak to the current Shelburne goalkeeper and two-time league winner, Dean Delaney. John, how's your week been?
Well, you were living it up over in Wales, and congratulations, by the way.
Thanks very much.
I was getting knee surgery, so it wasn't as pleasant for me as it was as it was for you, Kieran. But you had a good time over there, and you're over in Scotland as well.
Yeah, nice to come back to a hurricane, and unfortunately, Storm Ophelia has affected our equipment. It's done a bit of damage to the microphone, so we're without our usual recording equipment this week, folks. So if you do notice a slight difference in sound quality, please forgive us, and hopefully we'll get a new one in the post in the coming weeks.
But we do have a roof.
We have a roof, we have lights, we have cans. Not really. We're not drinking on the job, folks. But yeah, as I said, a huge show lined up again this week. Some massive games coming up in terms of the relegation dogfight. And also, it's time now to congratulate Cork City. Finally wrapped up that title. They are the champions, John.
Absolutely. Deserved over the season. I know they've limped over the line as such, but...
A bit like you, how you limped into the studio. Yeah,
exactly. So, congratulations go to Cork. And I'm really looking forward to looking at this running as well, Kieran.
Yeah, despite... You know, Cork had an amazing start to the season. They broke all sorts of records. Sean Maguire was, you know, tearing the league apart, really, and got his deserved move to Preston, as did Kevin O'Connor. But the last couple of weeks haven't been great for Cork. They only picked up 12 points from their last 30. Not disastrous form, but not exactly the form of... illustrious champions, I suppose. And that's been the debate on social media over the last 24 hours since Cork claimed that title with what was in truth an absolute bore fest of a 0-0 draw at home to Derry City. The debate has been whether Cork are good champions. Now, I don't really understand this term good champions. To me, the team with the most points and with the medals around their neck, they're the champions, and that's all people are going to remember. But the debate has been whether Cork City are good champions. And we ran a poll earlier on our social media page. Make sure you give us a follow. The handle is @BetweenStripes. And the question was, where would Cork City have finished without Sean Maguire? And at the moment, 33% of you say they would have finished second to Dundalk. 24% say they would have still been the champions because they had the best defence. And we really shouldn't overlook that amazing defensive record, John. 24% also saying they would have finished third. And amazingly, 19% of you seem to think this Cork team would have finished outside the top four. John, I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Well, the form at the moment's not good. If you look at the current form, I think it's something like they would have finished 8th or 9th in the table. So, you know, there is some justification to that talk about them not finishing in top four. And Kieran, I have to say, look how Seanie Maguire's done for Preston.
Yeah, he's been amazing. Man of the match awards every week, scoring goals on a regular basis, and picked up a hamstring injury, which is a little bit worrying for Ireland at the moment, but we'll be speaking about Ireland later on in the show. But
it's not often a player goes over and makes such an instant impact.
Yeah.
You look at the likes of the other two lads that went over from Dundalk, not a biggest impact as Seanie Maguire. Absolute class act.
Yeah, and I think it's very fitting in the year where we've seen Kevin Doyle have to retire through concussion. A lot of people credit Kevin Doyle as being the League of Ireland player that really went over and made the breakthrough for all these other players to follow, because he went over, he made a real impact, put the League of Ireland on the map in terms of, you know, saying there's players here that are good enough to make an instant step up. So if Sean Maguire could do that, it's going to open another window for, you know, people are always talking about the likes of Patrick McElhinney, although he's a great player, don't get me wrong, John. I know we've had this debate on the show many times. I would have my doubts about Patrick McElhinney playing at, you know, maybe a championship level in England. There's lots of other young players coming through the league. We're seeing Ford Sewell at Bohemians. He's linked with a move to League 2 at the moment, which for me, he's better than League 2, but it'd be a good stepping stone, I suppose. And there's loads of other good young prospects. And as we spoke with Dean Delaney a few moments ago, you'll hear that interview shortly, folks. He was speaking about how the League of Ireland has really taken steps forward with the underage structure. The 13s is on its way. We have the 15s, the 17s, the 19s. How that's going to, you know, create a whole new path for young Irish players. So it's great to see Sean Maguire doing as well as he is.
Absolutely, brilliant thing, and great for the league.
Yep. But folks, we're going to start the show today by looking back at the weekend's fixtures, and there's only one place to start, John. And we're going to actually go back to Cork's first game from the weekend, and that was a 0-0 draw away to Bohemians. This was the chance for Cork to claim the league title with the win. They couldn't do it. Bohs may be unlucky not to win this game. It was a poor performance from Cork, although there was a major penalty incident, and that's where we'll start. Shane Supple clearly taking down Carl Shepherd, but it wasn't given.
Yeah, exactly. It was blatantly brought down. It was a penalty in everybody's eyes apart from the referee. It's a bit like Cork's season. They started off very well. Cork, sadly, went close early on. Like you said, they should have had that penalty. It was a penalty, Kieran. There was no doubt about it. He was brought down by Shane Supple. So should have had that. But, after that, Bohs certainly got into the game and they were certainly the better team second half. McNulty made a fine save from a Paddy Gap Kavanagh rasping shot. Yeah. You know, we had him on the other week, didn't we?
He played really well, actually.
He looked the best player on show, actually.
One of the turning points for me, John, quite surprised, to be honest, Philip Gannon came on, the former Longford man, and he actually added quite a lot in the Bohemians midfield, helped Bohs really get the ball down. Cork were playing with an extremely direct approach in this game. Bohs, or the two teams, were the team trying to get it down a lot more than Cork, but when Gannon came on, he seemed to even add an extra bit of passing quality in the midfield, and Bohs really got on top towards the end.
Yeah, I don't think we saw the best of Phil Gannon at Longford, Kieran, and it is nice to see him getting a chance there, because he does have, we use the word a lot, potential, don't we? Mm. So, look, we hope he keeps on developing as a player. Look, Bohs should have won it at the end. Mate, Paddy Kavanagh, cracking cross to Dinny Corcoran header. You'd have put money on him to score. Yeah. And he ballooned it over, unfortunately. So, unfortunately for Bohs. So, look, Cork's wait for the title went on to their match last night against Derry City.
Yeah, an extended wait, because, of course, the game was called off on Monday with the weather warning that was in place across the country. And then it looked like the game wasn't going to take place at all with the damage to Turner's Cross. But thankfully, nobody hurt down there. And they got the stadium sorted. Obviously, it cut down 1,100 from the attendance last night, which was disappointing. But I think it's fair to say the majority of the loyal Cork support got to see the game. And obviously, it was live on television last night. Went up against Champions League football, which was great to see as well. But unfortunately, it wasn't the best spectacle, John. But Cork City claiming the title. And once again, congratulations to John Caulfield and his team.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations. Look, second 0-0 on the spin as well. So
third draw in a row.
Yeah, third draw in a row. They've really limped over the line, but look, we can't take too much away from them. They've been the best team, certainly in the early part of the season, and they've had enough points on the board to win the league. So congratulations to Cork, but I think they might find it trickier next season.
Yeah, I think so. And as we spoke about on the show recently, in the last few episodes, there's a lot of talk that Cork could lose some key players from this team, the likes of Carl Shepherd, for me, who's been one of the revelations this season.
Linked with Dundalk, Kieran.
Linked with Dundalk. It'd be a huge, huge addition to the Dundalk side. Whether John Caulfield will let that happen, we'll have to see. I'm sure Cork will be desperate to hold on to him. He's been excellent since he arrived at Turner's Cross. Greg Bulger, talking him moving on maybe to Waterford, although he hasn't been a key player this season, but he's still quite an important member of that squad. And obviously Ryan Delaney, you'd imagine, will go back to Burton Albion. So a lot of rebuilding for John Caulfield to do.
Yeah, he's got plenty of work to do there. I think you'll see him bring a fair few players in close season, Kieran. He'll know himself that team won't be good enough for Europe. You know, we talk about a Champions League qualifier. That team, it's going to come up against the seeded side.
Yeah,
that Cork side currently will be destroyed in Europe, Kieran. Unless
I sadly have to agree with you, John. For me, it's the style of football for me that Cork for me deserved to win the title. They had an amazing start to the season. They had an amazing defensive record. Absolutely, one of the best defensive records we've seen in recent times in the League of Ireland. So for me, it's unfair the way that they've been tarnished slightly, that people are saying they don't deserve it. People are entitled to say that it's boring. And I'd say it myself, I don't particularly enjoy watching Cork City. For me, their style of football isn't as good as the Dundalk. Even Derry, for me, play maybe a slightly better brand of football.
Kieran,
but they're the deserved champions, and there's no denying that.
Put that side up against the Legia Warsaw, a Bati Borisov. There's a lot of work for John Caulfield to do.
Yeah.
But he's just because he's won the league now, the hard work starts for him, I think.
I have to agree with you. And just a quick word on Derry, John. It was great to see the Cork captain, Alan Bennett, come out and pay tribute to the Derry players after the game. They've had an extremely tough year with the passing of Ryan McBride, and this result guaranteed them Europe next season, which is absolutely fantastic to see.
Yeah, brilliant. And a season where there's so much gone against them that they've managed to qualify for Europe. Look, hats off to Derek. They've done a great job. And
they obviously had a bad time in Europe this year with the heavy beating against Michelin, but they're a high quality opposition with a massive budget in terms of Europe. Obviously, the new Brandywell Stadium is on the way. It's really taking shape. If Derry can hold on to the players they have, I think of Patterson, I think of McNamee.
Ronan Curtis,
especially. Yeah. It's always hard to keep a player when they get into the international underage teams because it just adds so much more spotlight and everyone, all the scouts know who they are. So that's going to be a big job for Kenny Shields. But he has links and he's signed a lot of players from abroad recently. So we might see a bit more of that. And it's great when we see players coming into the league that are unknown. I think of Rodrigo Tosi at Limerick. So for me, with a couple of additions to that Derry team, they can certainly improve next season. And it's fair to say at the moment, they're outside that top two of Dundalk and Cork. They're just a slight level behind. But for me, they can certainly, put a real challenge up next season with a couple of additions.
I think they have three or four class act players. The job that they've got is to try and get some more to match them.
They always say a league winning team, it's a squad that wins it and not a team. And that's certainly going to be the case for Derry if they're challenged in the coming years.
Okay, Kieran, well, that's the league winners, but there has to be a bridesmaid, and that this season was Dundalk. They got a 1-0 win against Bray at the time, keeping up the pressure on Cork. Decent result, that. They had a lot of chances, Kieran. McMillan missed a great chance from a free kick, and another good chance after skinning Hugh Douglas there. Duffy also came close with a free kick. But the thing that changed when Bray went down to 10...
stupid sending off, absolutely. There's no word for it, but brain dead from Ryan Brennan. It was just such a stupid send-off, and I'd imagine he'd face further repercussions. He continued to sarcastically applaud the referee after being branded a second yellow card for doing so. So I'd imagine he's going to face an extended ban, and we mightn't see him till the start of next season. He might even miss a game.
Yeah, well, I've got the word idiot written down.
Yeah, well,
Kieran,
I'm not going to argue with that, John.
Yeah, yes, you take the card, but you don't clap the ref. You know what's coming if you do that, and... Kenny must have been furious with him after that. But look, the match went on. Chris Shields had three great chances. Chances that you'd probably love to see go to McMillan.
Bionic man.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable to see such a quick recovery. Maybe you can take some inspiration from your recent surgery, John.
Peter Cherry made some good saves from him. But look, it was a late show from Dundalk. And that was Michael Duffy again with a late goal that kept the title's hopes alive.
Yeah,
at the time.
And he's certainly a man in hot form at the moment. If he can keep this form up going into the cup final, you'd imagine he'd be a really key player in that final. Had a slow start to life at Dundalk, but in the last few weeks, he's really, really burst into form. And a man who's not the most loved man down in Dundalk, McNulty, the Cork goalkeeper, he came out even yesterday and said, look, I've taken shots at Dundalk in the past, but I'm going to have to take my hat off to them here. This league title looked like it was over, but Dundalk just wouldn't let it lie, and they kept going till the end, and credit to them, they're a top team, and it's hard to argue with them. This was another sign of Dundalk's fighting spirit. Okay, the title's gone, but they're building a bit of momentum going into this cup final. They've got a couple of injuries to contend with, but at this moment in time, you would make them favourites for that final.
Yeah, they won't want to see Cork do the double, neither.
No.
Make no bones about it. Look, let's move on. Let's look at the other end of the table now, because it's getting to crunch time. Galway played Pats, 1-1 draw. Galway, early goal. Great ball from Amanda, we talked about the other week, in form, Ronan Murray. So... great ball from him through, 1-0 to them, but Pats equalised, Fagan cross to Dennehy, 1-1. Look, Pats could have won it, they missed a great chance, Dennehy again, great chance to win it, swerving shot just wide near the end, 1-1, probably fair on paper.
Yeah, a really interesting tie for me, this one, because there are two teams that aren't in, considering where they are on the table, they're not in absolutely atrocious form.
No.
And whoever could get the 3 points from this, a lot of people were imagining they were going to be safe. So a draw it adds to the whole drama down at the bottom. Huge games coming up for both sides this weekend. So that point for each could be very valuable come the end of the season.
Absolutely. One team that I called for going down a few weeks ago, Kieran Harps, they went to Derry. They were beaten 3-0. Comprehensively beaten 3-0. It's a local derby. Harps seem to run out of fight, Kieran. Ronan Curtis, lovely run and goal for the first one for Derry. He set up Rory Patterson for the second. And a Doughty cross to Patterson for his second of the game made it 3-0. That's it for me. Harps are down, Kieran.
Well, I've been very supportive of Finn Harps all season, as you know, John, on the show. You've said it quite a number of times now that you feel they're gone. And I've said that they're still in with a fighting chance.
No.
This weekend, they go to Drogheda. if they don't win that game, they're gone. And if you can't beat Drogheda this season of all seasons, you don't deserve to stay in the Premier Division. As simple as that. And then if they can win that game at home to Drogheda, they then go into the final game against Bohemians away. And as big of a task that is, it's not inconceivable that Hearts could do it. Bohs, they only really have fifth place to play for in the table. Europe is long gone for Bohs now, so they may just take their foot off the gas. I don't think they will, but it's something that could happen. So Harps just have to focus on getting the job done this weekend against Drogheda. It doesn't matter if it's a 1-0 win or a 5 or 6-0 win. They have to get the job done and go into that last game all guns blazing.
Still something to play for.
Still something to play for. That's why I wouldn't rule Finn Harps out just yet.
Okay, Kieran. One club that made themselves a little bit more comfy down the bottom, and I think they're probably safe now, barring some ridiculous results, is Limerick. They played Drogheda. I suppose they knew a win there would have seen them pretty much safe. And to be honest, it was pretty much one-way traffic. It only finished 1-0. It was a dominant performance from Limerick. Drogheda defending, static, as we've talked about in previous weeks. Tosi, the right was on the wall early on. Tosi missed a header. But he was brought down for the penalty. He got up, scored it, 1-0. Deasy was sent off for a second yellow, dragging O'Benny down. And look... Drogheda, we're already down. Limerick, I think, safe with that, Kieran.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier in the show the impact that Tosi has brought to the league, his first season in the League of Ireland. He's been a revelation with 13 goals, fifth highest scorer in the League of Ireland Premier Division. And for me, Tosi's form at the start of the season, where he was absolutely scintillating. Of course, you cash your mind back to the very first game against Sligo, the 5-1 win, where he got a hat-trick on his League of Ireland debut. And his form now towards the end of the season, where he was dropped for a couple of weeks there towards the middle end of the season. He's come back into the team now, and he's starting to pop up with goals here and there. Very important contributions to Limerick's survival bid. And for me, he could be the real difference between Limerick staying up and going down. And as you said, I think Limerick are certainly safe now, and a win this weekend against Galway will confirm that.
Yeah, finally, a useful away point for Sligo, 1-0 against Shamrock Rovers. Rovers, as you'd expect, pretty on top of the game. There was an early warning from Gary Shaw hitting the bar from a Madden through ball. I nearly said Paddy Madden there. That's the oval thing. Simon Madden through ball.
Green and white, of course.
Absolutely. And then he was guilty of a terrible miss, was Gary Shaw. Blazed one over. I think he got a bobble, though, to be honest, Kieran. We can't be too critical.
He's ineptible to a few of those every now and again, Gary Shaw. But he's had a great season, in all fairness to him, and he's really stepped on leaps and bounds this season.
Yeah, and he made up for it, because it was a random melee run and cross that gave Rovers the lead. Gary Shaw converted it. Sligo hit back late on, 1-1. I know Gerard Little was probably delighted with the point, Kieran.
Yeah, Sligo obviously far from out of the relegation scrap at the moment. They're only a point clear, but things are starting to look up for them here. They got a point here against Shamrock Rovers. They have a home advantage this weekend against Derry City. Derry have already qualified for Europe, but I can't see Derry taking the foot off the gas here. There's a lot of comments coming out from Derry that they really want to get third place this season, so they're going to still keep fighting for that in the battle with Shamrock Rovers. And then Sligo, their final game is against Drogheda, so you'd imagine that's going to be a given 3 points. In any other season, you'd imagine 4 points from the final two would have been enough to secure Sligo safety, but because of their poor goal difference, if Galway were to get six from their final two, Sligo could still go down. So you know, Sligo really, just to be certain, they need to get 6 points in the last two games, but four, you'd imagine, will be enough, barring a miraculous end of the season from Galway.
But Sligo have a great chance, because they've still Drogheda to play, so you think they get 3 points against that. It's next week's home match against Derry that's going to be the crunch for them. So, that's the critical thing for them. So it's difficult to call, isn't it, who's going down this season? Like I said, I think Hearts are as good as down, Kieran. I can't see them getting the 6 points they need from Drogheda and Bohemians.
We're going to take a look at the massive Cup semi-final replay that took place at the Talla Stadium. Dundalk coming out 4-2 winners over Shamrock Rovers after extra time. And that result not only confirms that Dundalk will play Cork City for the third year running in the Aviva Stadium in the FAI Cup final, it means Shamrock Rovers, it's a trophyless season for Stephen Bradley.
Yeah, well, they were desperate to get to the final there, weren't they, Rovers? They were desperate to get to...
And it looked like they would for a long time after that equaliser from a former Dundalk man, Michael O'Connor.
Yeah, well, Ronan Finn opened the scoring. Sweet strike from Ronan Finn, and he will love that against his previous club. You know, he was in the news recently. I think he was he was comparing Dundalk and Rovers, wasn't he?
Yeah, that had a lot of spice to the game, I have to say.
But the man who turned it on the head wasn't a Dundalk player. He was Rovers goalkeeper...
Chinchinski.
Oh, my word.
Two absolute howlers. You know, he's been kind of hit and miss this season. He's had a couple of moments. My mind goes back to an absolute awful mistake he made against Cork City where he kind of stopped the ball on the end line and then momentarily took his hands off it, allowing Sean Maguire to nip in and tap it in. And he's had a couple of moments like that this season, and none more costly than the two errors he made here to allow David McMillan in.
Yeah, a couple of real flaps. The first one, yeah, like you said, the McMillan equalised, and the second flap for Benson's goal. Look, a goalkeeper of this quality in this league, Rovers have to have a goalkeeper who's reliable. I'm afraid Chinchinski in that match wasn't reliable. Now, I've praised him in the past, Kieran, but he had an awful performance when they probably needed him best. This was a cup semi-final.
Yeah, and when you look at the other end of the field, you know, Gary Rogers is a man that's been lambasted, for some mistakes, especially in Europe in recent seasons. But he's stepped his game up massively this season.
It's been excellent.
And only for him, they would not be in this FAI Cup final.
Yeah. Look, McMillan made it 3-2, and O'Donnell at the end made it 4-2.
A fantastic header from O'Donnell.
Yeah, it was. It was a big scrap as well in this match.
we love a big scrap every now and again. Yeah. We'll talk about that now, John.
Yeah.
Ball went out for a throw-in. Shamrock Rovers felt it was their throw. Stephen O'Donnell felt it was a Dundalk ball. He tried to gain the ball back from the Rovers man who was about to throw in, and Stephen Bradley then got involved with a little bit of a shove on O'Donnell, and it all kicked off. Every player on the pitch involved, coaching staff involved, the Shamrock Rovers fitness coach sent to the stands, yellow cards all over the place. Madness.
Absolute madness. I think it just goes to show in these matches that's so important for both clubs, how tempers can fray and look. Yeah, nobody got punched, so we're all right.
There was a real nastiness to this tie.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in a bad sense. Obviously, we talked about on our most recent show how it was disappointing to see some of the trouble that we've seen down in Oriel Park. But just in an off-field sense, there was the whole ticket fiasco. Dundalk only getting 500 tickets. The toilets were closed in Tallaght Stadium. We believe that's because of an incident at the EA Cup final that we won't speak about. There was just so much going on. Rowan and Finn's comments. Then we had this going on, the brawl. It had a bit of everything this game, and two absolutely cracking ties. And for me, the biggest disappointment is that replay wasn't televised.
Yeah, and it wasn't the final. That would have made a great final.
Would have made a fantastic final. Just hoping that the final is going to be a bit more entertaining than the last two have been, because they've been extremely cagey affairs between Cork and Dundalk.
They have, yeah. Look, we can only hope that there's an improvement. I've been to the last two, and they have been very turgid matches almost, Kieran. Lack of opportunities, teams not wanting to make a mistake. So they have been poor. The stakes are high in this one. Cork are still up for a double, and Dundalk will want to stop them doing that. So
yeah, I think everyone speaks about last season's cup final and what a huge win it was for Cork in terms of mentality going into this season.
Yeah.
And how Sean Maguire just really spun the whole thing on its head. He broke that Dundalk dominance and gave Cork a real impetus going into the start of this season. So likewise, Dundalk are going to want to say to Cork City, we're still the top dogs and we're going to reclaim our title next season.
Yeah. Who are you going with, Kieran, for that final?
It's an interesting one, John, because if you look at Dundalk at the moment, they're obviously in great form. But they're starting to pick up a lot of injuries. Shields, you know, it's hard to see how he'll be fully fit for that cup final, mm-hmm. despite coming back and putting in some great performances.
I'm sure he'll be fit for a cup final.
Yeah. One man that won't be is Dan Massey. He's been ruled out today. So Shane Grimes is probably most likely going to start left back. Mm-hmm. He's putting some decent performances, I have to say, for a man that hasn't played a lot. But he will be one, I'm sure, Cork City are going to pinpoint as one they could expose, especially when you look at the wide players in that Cork team, the likes of Sadley or Shepherd, Dooley. I'm sure they'll be looking to get a Grimes. So that could break up Dundalk's momentum in the last couple of games. They've kind of bedded a few young players in recent weeks. On the flip side of that, Cork have a couple of weeks now to rest players if they feel that's the right way to go about it. But as we said, they've already suffered a lack in form since Sean Maguire's left. So will resting players now further affect that? If they were to lose their next two league fixtures, for example, how is that going to affect them going into the cup final? So for me, it's a real toss of the coin again this year, but everything is pointing to a Dundalk win at the moment.
And let's hope we get a better match, Kieran.
Yeah. But before we move on to speak about this weekend's Premier Division fixtures, John, we're going to bring you the first of this evening's interviews. And I spoke earlier to current Shelburne goalkeeper, two-time League of Ireland winner, Dean Delaney. So we are delighted to be joined on this week's show by a two-time League of Ireland winner, also numerous other successes throughout his illustrious League of Ireland career. It's, of course, the current Shelburne goalkeeper, Dean Delaney. Dean, you're very welcome to the League of Ireland podcast.
Thanks very much.
So, Dean, obviously we're going to speak about your season has just ended recently with Shelburne, but as I said there, a long, illustrious career in the League of Ireland, so many trophies, two league titles with Shelburne in 2004, 2006. But obviously it all started with an FA Youth Cup win in 98 with Everton. And obviously we hear a lot in Irish football the debate on whether Irish players should go abroad when they're younger or whether they should stay to develop here in the League of Ireland. As an experience, how did you find that time over in England? How did that set you up for your League of Ireland career?
I found it very tough now. I left when I was 16, and being honest with you, looking back now, I don't think I was ready for it because I was still, you know, kind of growing up, still a young kid hanging around the streets. I wasn't ready to go to that side of it, I don't think, that early, you know. For me now, I think where the League of Ireland is looking to go, I think they're trying to implement it small but too quickly, but where they're trying to get it down to under 14 level. It's the right plan in place, but I can see what they're trying to do. They're trying to give all these talented young lads another option. And that's what they need, really, because there's way too much talent being wasted. You know, if you look, I don't know what the figure is that goes away every year, but say it's around 600-700 lads that go away. You're looking at nearly two-thirds of them coming back, you know, within the second year. And then even out of that last tour that's left, does one even really make it out of that year, you know? Mm. It's a phenomenal rate of talent that's being lost. So I can understand what's being implemented now. The only thing I think it's a small bit too quick where schoolboy clubs are concerned, because it's kind of going to decimate them to an extent unless they're attached to a League of Ireland club. But they'll basically become nurseries, I think, in the future. But will they survive, you know, through this quick transition? I don't know. But I guess time will tell. But where talent's concerned, it's an awful waste of what's been happening. From what I've seen in the last 15, 20 years, the talent of players that have gone across and haven't made it, you know. But hopefully what they're implementing now is the right route to go down, you know.
So you say you maybe had a difficult time to start out in England, Dean, but despite that, you were part of the golden generation, as it's famously known, the 1999 World Youth Championship side, of course, famously claimed bronze, the likes of Damien Duff, Robbie Keane, Richard Dunn. And you also picked up an under-18 UEFA Championship medal with Ireland. So that must have been a great experience, and I'd imagine you look back at that very fondly.
Don't get me wrong, when I say it was hard, I mean, as a 16-year-old going across, it was a dream, you know. Nobody was ever going to deter me from going over. And I feel that for young lads, because that's what they're being offered. They're being offered what's on Match of the Day, you know. And in a way, it's kind of it's glamorous, but there's another side of it, and nobody really gets to see the other side of it, you know. My first year in England was a phenomenal year. We went on to win the FAU Cup, as you said, and we won the European Championships with Ireland. And then I think into the next year, then we went on to play in the World Cup in Nigeria, you know. And I think we came toward, I fell back then because of my age, that I was a year ahead of myself. I fell back then into the under-18 championships again, and we came toward, I think, in that tournament, so picked up a bronze medal, you know. And within those 2 years, they were phenomenal years for me, achievement-wise, but it's very hard when you go home and you achieve those things, and you go home and you're literally sitting in a bedsit in a box room. Where do you go? You know, I mean, people are at the end of the phone already, and you've a few mates that are in around the team, but your real mates that you've left behind in whatever for me, which was Dublin, you don't have that tangibility with them anymore. You know, they're there on the phone already, but you don't have that team where you're sharing, you know, secrets with them, and they're there and they're sitting around and they're having a laugh and that. Like that thing goes, and it's very hard. It's a character building thing for young lads when they go over, whether they can adjust to that really quickly. Will obviously will show where they'll end up, you know. And if you don't adjust to that fairly quickly, you'll be home within the first year or two. But if you do adjust to it and kind of and grow quickly, as you say, you have a small chance of doing something, you know. I mean, for me, like it was that thing of just being away from home. Maybe I was a homeboy, you know, but I ended up staying over there for 8 years because I really did want to give it a good crack, and I was happy with what I did and stuff. But I just think it's a difficult time for young people to go over at that age. You know, it's very, very young, you know.
Yeah, and as I said, Dean, obviously so much, you obviously had that success with Everton in the Youth Cup. You didn't play in the Football League Trophy success at Port Vale, but you were still part of that side, and obviously that would have brought a lot of attention to yourself. There wasn't as many Irish players, I suppose, in the spotlight back then. And as I said, so much League of Ireland success. And also, you were called up to a training session while Brian Kerr was the Ireland manager, and you made numerous under-21 appearances. So do you ever look back and maybe wonder why one of the most respected League of Ireland goalkeepers maybe never got that second chance in England? Does that ever play on your mind?
It's a tricky one to call, really, because I had 8 years over there, you know, and I think I knew when I come back. I was 24 when I come back and joined Shelbourne, and I had a hard job of trying to oust Steve Williams, who was one of the best keepers in the league at the time. So with the first year I come back, it was competing with him for roughly two seasons to try and oust each other, you know that way. And I never really played week in, week out when I first come back. And maybe that was a thing that if it had happened, you know, you could have looked, you know, back across the world. But I was happy with the 8 years I had over there. I feel that, you know, I achieved a few things while I was there. It wasn't just an unnecessary trip across the pond, let's say. But I feel that I did achieve things and you know, and done me a bit as well. Don't get me wrong now, I'm sure you ask any player that that's come back, whether it be 4, 5 years, 7 years, would they really, you know, change things when we go back? But we could all do that. We could all look back in hindsight. But I think it's probably a thing that's still in me to keep playing to this day, that maybe I didn't go back across, I didn't achieve the things that I felt I could have achieved. So it keeps me going to this day. You know, I'm 37 now and I'm still playing. So it's obviously a bit of a fire that's born in me belly to still play and prove people wrong. So maybe that's what's keeping me going so long. But when I look back, definitely don't look back in regret. I look back in happiness because it's led me to this road where I am now. So I have to look at that and look at the life lessons that I learned along the way, and it's been a hell of a journey, but been a good one too, so, you know.
By the sounds of it, Dean, there's still a little bit to go on that journey. Have you made a decision on your future for next season yet?
But to be honest with you, I haven't sat down and spoke to Owen. Obviously, we're getting player of the year last year. I was delighted with that. It just kind of reaffirms for me that I'm still doing the right things, you know, whether it be eating right or preparing right and all the other things that go with it, you know. I'm obviously doing the right thing. And look, I really enjoyed my football last year. And for a couple of years, I had a bowls. I think it was there 3 or 4 years. I really enjoyed my time then as well. So, mate, I know people do say it's a thing that, you know, if you're in around that bracket of 20, 25, 26, 27 as a keeper, you still have a few years left, you know. Provided you keep on form, you know. And that's all I wanted to prove to myself this year when I left Bowes, is that I still had the form that I had at Bowes, you know. And obviously, like I said, getting the Player of the Year award has kind of reaffirmed that for me. So I feel good, you know. I don't think I picked up any injuries last year. A couple of niggly injuries, but it never stunted me from playing. So if that continues for the next year or two, yeah, I'd happily play on, you know, as long as my form is good. But I think I'll know myself what things start to dip, or I'm picking up injuries, you know, week in, week out, where I'm not getting that consistency of form. Once that starts happening, I'll definitely pull the plug, you know. I'll know straight away.
Just while we're on the subject of your former club, Bowes, Dean, it's very rare you see a man that's, I suppose, universally popular at both Bowes and Shelburne, great Dublin rivals down the years, but having made so many appearances and won honours at both clubs, you're a man that's highly respected at both Dublin grounds. A fifth place finish for Bowes in your season there under Keith Long. Bowes have had another wonderful season this year under Keith Long. Would you agree that maybe he's a Manager of the Year contender?
I certainly think you have to look at the budget he's been given. This is the thing that nobody really gets to see as well. I know a lot of people see Bowes as still a big club, you know. And maybe some people see that they're underachieving. But if you look at the budget that they have and the situation they're in, it is quite remarkable where they've been the last couple of seasons. You know, in all the 3 or 4 years that we spent there, the budget was very low, and we we were doing really well to keep ahead of Bob Walker. And like you said, we kind of exceeded ourselves in one of the years by finishing fifth. And if Keith goes ahead and replicates that again this year, you know, it has to be looked at as a really, really good achievement on his behalf. Because he hasn't been afraid to change things up, and he hasn't been afraid to look towards the future as well. Like, so he has to, you know, hats off have to be given to him where that's concerned, and he's done a good job. And I think it was a smart move by bringing in Trevor Crowley as well. He's obviously freshened things up for him as well. But the one thing I will say about Gibby, he wasn't afraid to make those changes. Someone just can't be afraid that they don't upset the apple cart. But in fairness to him, he did. He made his changes, and obviously they've come to fruition now this year. If they go on to finish fifth, it'd be a pat on the back for him. But I'm sure he'll want to go on and achieve more than the following year. You know, he's an ambitious manager, so it's like I said, it's hats off to him. Provided they finish in the top 5 or 6, like I said, for both, you know, we're a really low budget, but it's a phenomenal achievement, you know.
And finally, Dean, on Shelburne this season, a good end to the season, mid-table in the first division. Like Bowes, they would be a team that doesn't have the biggest budget at the moment after some harsh financial years at the club. And a Leinster Senior Cup success, it might not be the most prestigious of ones, but for a club like Shelburne that have had a couple of dark years, it's very good to see them picking up silverware again. So I'm sure you're delighted with that.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm delighted again. It's another medal to my collection, you know. But the other thing I was kind of mentioning to young players that are coming through the ranks is that, like, look, let this be a little bit of hunger for you, you know, that this is what it can be like when you have these nights, when you win things and achieve things. And for them going into the future, it's something that they can look forward to, kind of win another cup in the part, you know, a bigger cup, you know, a league cup or an FAO cup, kind of go on and get promoted in the team. And if they don't, can they go on and have better careers, you know, can they go on to sign for a Cork or sign for a Dundalk, and then can they go on to, you know, constantly improving themselves and going across the water, you know? That has to be the aim for them, you know, and to have no limits on where they want to be, because there's an awful lot of talented young lads that are out there, and obviously we're a club that's giving young lads a chance because of the financial situation. I think if you ask Owen himself and myself or even any other senior lads, it turned out a good year in the end, but for me personally, I was bitterly disappointed not to get promoted. But then I have to look back and say, look, with a small budget, with a lot of young lads in the team, you have to kind of evaluate that and sit back and say, okay, look, maybe it was a decent season the way we finished. But I suppose my idea of coming down to play with Shells in the first division was to get straight back up and try and have a year or two in the Premier, you know. And that's something that I'll be looking forward to again next year if I sign again. It's the promotion is number one, you know. You want to be up playing Premiership football, it's where it's at. But I can see the plan that Shelburne have. It's slowly introducing these young lads and see how they get on. And hopefully they can keep them together for 4 or 5 years and build a really good team. That has to be the ethos of the club. And they are a really, really good club like that. They're a family club. So I've been there to see if we play again next year. It'll be my 10th year. So I've had a lot of time with the club. I know the club inside out, and I know what they're looking to achieve. So a bit of patience and obviously a bit of ambition along the way, and hopefully we get the financial backing in the next year or so. And who knows what can happen, you know? Then maybe he can be back up there in the next year or so and challenging in the top half of the league, you know.
Well, Dino, we could speak to you all day. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much for coming on the show, and the very best of luck wherever the future brings.
Absolute pleasure, lads. Take care.
Cheers, Dean.
Talk to you soon.
Enjoyed the show so far? Why not drop us a review on iTunes? Is there something you'd like featured on next week's show? Tweet us on @BetweenStripes or find us on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Finally, our website address is www.betweenthestripesblog.wordpress.com. Enjoy the second half.
Okay, Kieran. Well, you know, it's really good to hear from Dean Delaney. And I think sometimes we talk about these players that go over to England, but you don't realise the impact it has on them. Dean went over when he was 16. It was obviously very intimidating being away from home without his parents. It was great to get that kind of insight.
Yeah, great to speak to Dean because he's been one of my favourite goalkeepers growing up in the League of Ireland around a long time now, as we know, but a real quality goalkeeper. And it was great to hear him speaking there about the youth. He speaks very passionately about it. And great to hear that he feels he still has a more to offer the League of Ireland. And I'm looking forward to watching him again next season. saved the penalty against Longford in the very first game of the season, you might remember, John, and made a great save in a one-on-one situation as well. So he's been to the scourge of Longford for many years, whether it's been Shells, Bohemians or Waterford he's been playing for, but from a neutral point of view, a great goalkeeper.
Well, I'm going to wish him happy retirement.
So we'll move along now, John, to speak about this weekend's fixtures.
Yeah.
And we're going to start off with Finn Harps against Drogheda. So a huge game here for Finn Harps. As I said, it's last chance saloon. They need to win this one, really, if they're going to have any chance of staying up. 5 points from safety. Minus 29 goal difference means even a draw may send Harps down in this game. They have the joint second worst home record in the league, so that's a worry going into this one. But on the flip side of that, they have beaten Drogheda already this season, a 2-0 win away from home in July. But they lost on to the same scoreline, 2-0 at home in April. And for me, that is the result when they look back at the end of the season that could be the undoing of Finn Harps.
Yeah, well, it's a must-win game, isn't it, now for Harps? I think they'll have enough to beat Drogheda this weekend. It'll keep them alive for another week, possibly depending on other results. But I don't think it'll be enough for them to stay up. There was some good news off the field for Drogheda, though.
Yeah, it looks like a new stadium could be on the way for Drogheda. It's been talked about for so many years up in County Louth about Drogheda United getting a new stadium. League of Ireland fans, I think they've always, when they hear it, they kind of brush their shoulders at it and say, no, that's never going to happen. But it looks like progress has been made. It'll be a huge, huge boost to Drogheda United. But of course, First Division football coming next year, it could be a bleak couple of years. I suppose this could be the light at the end of the tunnel in many sense, but they need to get the on-field issue sorted if they're going to be looking to go to that new stadium with a real sense of hope for the future.
Yeah, it is a positive though, Kieran. I mean, they were talking about a lot of pitches there, five-a-side pitches also, so it's going to be quite a bit complex.
Yeah, but just on that game against Harps, Drogheda without a win in 21, so if Harps aren't winning this, it's as simple as they don't deserve to stay in the Premier Division, John. So
no, Harps have to win it. It's as simple as that, Kieran.
Yeah, so I think we'll move on to the next one.
No problem, Kieran. So Limerick against Galway. Limerick, we think, probably safe now, but they'll be wanting to make sure of it against Galway. A defeat for Galway could see them down.
Yeah, defeat for Galway, as you said, would send them down, but they need Pats and Sligo to win their game, so it's probably unlikely that it will come tonight, but Galway are in a real danger position now of falling out of the Premier Division. This game against Limerick comes then with their final game of the season will be against Dundalk. Dundalk, obviously, nothing to play for, and as we said, they may look to blood a few young players. So if Galway can win this one, they do have a chance going into that last one. But on the flip side, Limerick, with a win, will secure safety. 5 points clear with two to play. Their final fixture comes away to Shamrock Rovers. So it's important to get the job done here for Limerick. And with their home form being quite good this season, 6 wins at home out of their 10 wins. So the majority of their wins have come at the Markets Fields. As we said, Tosi in good form. I feel Limerick have the advantage in this one, John.
Yeah. Well, like I say, Limerick need point for safety, maybe 3 points, but I think they'll get at least a point.
Yeah, unbeaten in their last 4 Premier Division games, so they're in a good run of form.
Yeah,
Galway with themselves are in. Yeah,
I was just going to say that. They're in a good run of form.
Unbeaten in their last 5 Premier Division games.
Yeah, and a man named Ronan Mullen who's on fire at the moment. Every time I see him, I get more impressed with him. So
yeah. Draws no good here for Galway, really. And draws have been the scourge of their season. 13 draws this season. That's the second highest in the Premier Division. Only Sligo have more draws with 14. So the positive for Galway, they did win one league meeting this season, 3-1, and they claimed a 1-1 draw as well. But Limerick won the most recent meeting in the FAI Cup with a 2-1 win. So it's a tough one to call, I have to say. They're two sides that like to play good football. Having spoke to Galway fans on the show this season, they feel that their league position doesn't show that the football they have been playing, they've been playing good football, but that doesn't matter a damn now, John. They have to win this game if they're going to have any chance of staying up. And for me, I can't see it. I'm going to go with a Limerick win here.
Well, they'll be needing a favour from the champions, Cork, who travelled to St Pat's, but will they be nursing a massive hangover, Kieran?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, John, because as we said at the start of the show, you know, a lot of people are talking about Cork not being good champions. So there might be a little, you know, I've seen a couple of tweets today from a few Cork players where they're kind of laughing those comments off. They might just have it inside their heads that they'd like to go out and show in these final two games that they are, you know, the real deal, and maybe brush St Pat's aside. But with the cup final coming up, you would imagine John Caulfield will rest players, especially with Dundalk in the position. They can afford to rest players as well. So St. Pat's fans were certainly celebrating that point for Cork last night as much as the Cork fans were.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose they know a win against Cork could see them safe, couldn't it?
Yeah, 1 point clear of Galway in 10th, unbeaten in the last three, although two of them have been draws. And Pat's, it's hard to see why they're in this situation because... Well, we all know they're in this situation, I suppose. It was the start of the season was absolutely horrendous. Mm. They've claimed 18 points from their last 30 available. And to put that into contrast, Cork, the champions, have only claimed 12 in that same amount of time. So it's a decent run of form, if not a good run of form for St. Pat's. And a win here, you imagine, will secure their safety.
Exactly, Kieran. Look, the only other match involving teams down the bottom there is Sligo's home match against Derry. Now, I suppose Derry, with they've cemented the place in Europe. Will they be taking their foot off the gas as well?
No, as I said earlier, John, I don't think Derry will take their foot off the gas. They're desperate to finish third this season and show that they're in a position to challenge for the title next season. It's been a long, hard season for Derry, as we know, so I'm sure they'll be eager to finish it on a high note. Reduced rest time though is the only thing after that game but moved to a Tuesday in Turner's Cross, but they are unbeaten in their last three since that hammering they took at the hands of Bray. And for me, the big difference in this game will be the firepower of both sides. Derry have scored 48 goals this season while Sligo have only scored 30, so that shows why Sligo are in the position they're in. From a Sligo point of view, 1 point clear of the drop zone, but crucially their final game comes away to Drogheda. You'd imagine that's going to be a guaranteed 3 points. 4 points here will be enough to secure Sligo's safety as long as Galway don't pick up six, because Sligo's goal difference is significantly worse than Galway. Sligo on minus 14, Galway on minus 9. Fatherty's been in good form in recent weeks. And Raf Gartaro, we had him on the show recently. He spoke about the importance of the showgrounds factor in the final games. And this one comes at the showgrounds. And while their form hasn't been scintillating, they've only picked up 5 home wins all season, which is one of the lowest home win rates in the league. They did claim a crucial 1-0 home win against Bowes recently, and for me that could be the factor here. But as I said, the firepower in this Derry side should be enough to see them take all 3 points, so I'm going to go for a Derry win. What's your prediction on that, John?
I think Sligo know they have to get something. I think they'll get at least a point with this one, Kieran. I think they have to. I know they've got Drogheda last match of the season. They won't want to leave it till then. So.
And overall, the Sligo situation, do you think they'll do enough to stay up overall?
I think so. I have to say I'm very worried for Galway. I think they're in...
Is that final game trouble. the real deciding factor, the fact that Sligo play Drogheda?
Yeah, that's going to help them, whereas Galway, they've to play Dundalk. Now, you know, we know Dundalk haven't much to play for, but it's still
it's
Dundalk.
It's a different calibre, yeah.
Yeah. Look, two matches, not a real lot riding on them next. Dundalk play Bohemians.
Yeah, in saying that, a lot riding on them, John. Dundalk, they're unbeaten in their last 8 Premier Division games. I'm sure they'd like to keep that run going. They've claimed 1-0 and 2-0 wins over Bowes this season, so the head-to-head points towards the Lily Whites. Title is gone, cup final focus, of course, and as I've mentioned, injuries, and they'll be looking to bed young players. On the flip side, Bohemians, they're officially safe after that 0-0 draw against Cork on Friday, 7 clear with just the 2 games to play. They can still finish 5th, they're only 2 points behind Bray. That would be another great season for Keith Long, who's previously managed to get Bowes up to 5th. 4 wins in the last 10, so in decent form. 3 draws in that time. So, as I said, decent run. Good season for Bowes. I'm sure they'll also be looking to finish strong. But for me, Dundalk should just have enough.
Yeah, I agree with that one, Kieran. And the final match, we've got Bray against Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, so I think fair to say here, John, 2 teams where the season hasn't gone to plan.
Mm-hmm.
Bray had started so well, but as I said at the very beginning of the year on this show, you know, people were talking about Bray as being this big surprise package in the league. For me, it wasn't. Their budget was one of the highest, and they were where they should be in terms of spending. That's gone belly up. Yeah. We've seen the off-field disaster that it's been. Europe's gone now. As we know, Harry Kenny's going to be gone next season as well, so the future is very, very uncertain for Bray. I'd imagine we won't see a big crowd out of this one, considering the everything that's gone on, and now that Europe is out of their hands. As for Shamrock Rovers, they're 1 point clear of Derry in the battle for third. A trophyless season for Stephen Bradley, so that'll be extremely disappointing for him and the Shamrock Rovers fans. Lisbon has been a massive factor this season. As we said, there was that Barney in the cup semi-final replay,
yeah.
And obviously we've seen a red card.
double figures red cards, haven't they?
Yeah, it must be at this stage. Also, some big news this week for anyone that hasn't seen it. Paul Corey announcing his retirement at just the age of 26. A player that had, you know, huge potential when he was with UCD, went across to England and had quite a good start to life in England, but injury's the killer, John, as we see so often, sadly.
Yeah, it's such a shame, isn't it? Especially at such a young age. We wish Paul the best in the future.
Yeah, well, certainly.
Now, I'm worried for this brace of Team Kieran at the end of the season. I think it's going to be... I'd put money on now for getting relegated next season.
Yeah, it could be a good show.
How on earth are they going to keep hold of the likes of McCabe and Hugh Douglas? And
They're not going to keep a hold of them. And even the lesser star names in the squad, I think the likes of Mark Salmon in that team.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's only been on the bench in the last couple of weeks, but he's an experienced player, and I'm sure a couple of first division teams might have a look at him.
Any in particular?
Well, I don't like to be dropping hints or anything, but Mark, if you're listening, please come back to Longford. So the likes of Mark Salmon, obviously you've mentioned Hugh Douglas, Conor Kenna's there, a huge experienced player that's won league titles. Aaron Green is the man, I'm sure, the likes of both Cork and Dundalk going to look at. And Gary McCabe's been one of the highest scorers in the league. So I think that's a great shout, John. And we might, if we're going to do a charity event next season, maybe Bray Wanderers to get relegated, it could be a great shout.
Yeah, the Wolves will be circling the door, so to speak.
Yeah, but you'd have to worry more off the field than you would on the field for Bray. Mm. Everything that's gone on, it's been a horrendous season. When it looked like they were going to salvage Europe, you know, people probably imagined everything was rosy in the garden again and the money that would bring in. But it's just a real mess at the moment. I think we could see a couple of headlines yet towards the end of the season. Of course, there's still an investigation ongoing at Bray.
I know my feelings on Bray. I'm not going to say them out loud because I don't want any solicitor's letters for his Kieran or anything like that, but I'd be very concerned, let's put it that way. But look, that's their penultimate match against Rovers. What do you think of the way you win, maybe, Kieran?
Doesn't really matter, John, does it?
No, it doesn't make the big scheme of things.
We're not great at predictions, so you might as well ask someone else. That's the League of Ireland action rounded up, folks. We have one more game week left after this. Obviously, the First Division is concluded. Waterford will be in the Premier next season. But before we round the show up tonight, we're going to speak to this man who started out the season as the assistant at Longford Town. Of course, he's a former Shelburne manager, of course, as well. Very highly regarded individual within the league. And it was great to speak to Kevin Doherty, who does a lot of punditry work for the likes of News Talk. And we spoke to him about the Republic of Ireland, obviously into the playoffs now against Denmark. I'm one of the many out there trying to find any route possible to Copenhagen.
I've been Googling, trying to help you. I've suggested Malmo and then a train, you know, so I'm doing the big
thing. It's just a ticket, so if there's any FBI top brass listening to the show, I'm sure there is, John, I'm sure they're listening. If you can throw a couple of tickets this way, that would be great. But yeah, this was the interview we did earlier with Kevin Doherty, so please enjoy, folks. So I'm delighted to be joined on this week's show by former Shelburne manager, Kevin Doherty. Kevin, also a former player at many League of Ireland clubs. Kevin, you're very welcome to the show and thanks for joining us.
Not a problem, Kieran. How are you?
So, Kevin, we have you on the show today to discuss the Republic of Ireland. Of course, it's been a massive few weeks recently for Ireland. There was that win over Moldova, maybe not the best performance, but it set up a huge crunch showdown with Wales in Cardiff last Monday and a magical result for the Republic of Ireland, which sent them into the playoffs. And the draw today has set them up against Denmark. So your thoughts on the draw initially, Kevin, sorry.
Well, the draw, I think, looking at it, I know you don't want to underestimate any team, but certainly the most favourable draw that we could have got. If you look at the other teams that we could have got, Switzerland, Italy, Croatia, we're all ranked higher in the world rankings and stuff than Denmark. Denmark, as I said, were the best possible draw that we could have gotten. And the fact that we are playing them away from home first as well is another favourable thing, which is probably continuing a bit of good luck that they've had, that the Irish side and management team have had. They seem to have had some good luck over the last while. And look, they went and did the business last week. I'm not taking anything away from that, but it was certainly the most favourable draw, I think, that we could have got.
Yeah, but speaking of luck, Kevin, also Ireland have had to deal with a lot of injuries in this campaign, especially going into some of the bigger games. And in the last couple of days, we've seen a couple of worries for Martin O'Neill. Shane Duffy seems to be struggling with an injury. Sean Maguire, despite his great start to pressing, he's picked up a hamstring injury, so he's going to have to be looked at ahead of that one. A couple of other players that will be in doubt. And obviously, David Myler is going to be suspended for the first leg, which is a huge blow. He's been a great asset to the team since he's come in.
He's been brilliant. I think Myler's been our most, certainly in the two games that you mentioned, the Moldova game and the Wales game. I think he was probably one of the most influential players over the course of the two games. But Shane Duffy, was absolutely immense in, against Wales. And I saw something that I don't think, it doesn't seem to be too bad, his one. Maguire, is if he's out, I don't know how bad the extent of the injury is, but probably not going to play anyway, like being the way things have gone so far, for the way he tends to stick with the teams. But it's funny you talk about luck. I was thinking about it afterwards, and we were going into the Wales game and we were saying we're obviously down Coleman, Walters, but sounds maybe wrong to say, but I actually think Shane Long being unavailable for the game, you wouldn't want to wish anyone injury, of course, but being unavailable for the game actually turned the tide in Ireland's favour a little bit, the way I think we went and set up a different way. I think if he had been available, Mark probably would have stuck with the same formation, same team, maybe that played against Moldova. Well, obviously, the lads coming back in, but maybe the Brady and McLean coming back in, but he might have stuck with the same formation. And I think the way it maybe forced him a little bit, we'd only really had Morphy available that he would probably have trusted to start the game up front. Had it Long been available, who knows what way he would have went. And I think the way we set up then, sort of off that, it certainly contributed to the result and to the success and ultimately getting to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's funny you should mention that Shane Long situation, actually, because travelling over to the game, I travelled over on the morning of the game, and all the talk in the airport before the game was whether Martin O'Neill would stick with Shane Long or not. Obviously, with him being then ruled out only a couple of hours before kickoff, I took that decision out of Martin O'Neill's hands. So, as you said, that was obviously a major contribution to the formation and the tactics that Martin O'Neill set out with.
Yeah, and I think, maybe he was going to do that anyway, but it certainly worked well. But for the first 15 minutes, I don't think we had the ball to put two passes together. So it looked as at one stage they did an extra man, and you're thinking, geez, what way is this going to go? But in fairness to them, they kept the shape really, really well. Restricted Wales to no chances, really. They didn't.
Mm.
They didn't as much as the ball they had, and I think they were always probably going to have more of the ball than us, particularly being away from home. And I think we restricted them very, very well. Kept their shape. Fullback stayed at home for most of the game, really. But kept that mid. We had that extra man in midfield that we wouldn't have had probably if Shane Long had a play. I think they set up really well. I think Bale being out was the massive big bit of luck that we had probably for the whole campaign. But then Joe Allen going off certainly changed the game. He was starting to, he was knitting things up together. Ramsey was further forwards. Then I think maybe, look, I'm not here to criticise international managers much better than I ever was or ever will be, but I think Chris Coleman made a mistake by moving Ramsey back then and making that change rather than leaving Ramsey where he was and bringing somebody else on to play in Joe Allen's role, because it certainly upset Wales a hell of a lot more than it upset us, the change, and it played into our hands. And once I think we weathered that storm, probably 20 minutes maybe, as much as a storm, as I said, they didn't really create many chances. But once we weathered them having the ball so much, I felt we grew into the game and started to put our foot in the ball a little bit better. I'm not saying we played fantastically well, but there's more than one way to win a football match, and keeping your shape and defensive shape and being big and strong and heading things and kicking things, sometimes you just have to do that. And then ultimately then going on, and you could see the way the game was going. Hendrick more or less told Hennessy to go and play the ball to Ashley Williams, and well, he actually pointed, I think, to him, closed him down, won the ball back high up the pitch, pressed, good ball across, and then Jane McLean was a great finish.
Yeah, of course, though, Kevin, the big thing now is, as you said there, it all comes down to results. Things are going very well for the Republic at the moment. Obviously, some people might say that they could have potentially won this group only for the slip-ups against Georgia and the home game against Serbia. The style of football is always going to be questioned, I suppose, under Martin O'Neill and under previous Irish managers as well. So it really is massive that they obviously win this playoff to get to Russia, but also in a sense of how, I suppose, supporters look at the national team as well at the moment. They're shying away maybe from the unattractive style of football and just focusing on results.
Yeah, I can understand that. Like, I mean, the reality of the situation with Ireland is, like, we had some of the best players in Europe, like, over whatever, 20, 30 years, and we never played attractive football.
Mm.
Like, the only time, and I'm probably harping on to what every League of Ireland supporter probably thinks, is, like, the only time you ever string two passes together is when Wesley's in the team.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, and Wes is, like, what's he now, 35, 36, is he? Must be approaching that age anyway. Like, he's not going to be there for much longer. We can all be looking for. And I think once when the team was announced last week, everyone was saying, no Wes, and myself included, because I played with Lookout and home. He's great. He is a great player. And, like, that style of football, I think the if Ireland qualify for World Cups and qualify for European Championships, there'd be plenty of support and the crowds will be there. I don't think we're, like, I wouldn't say we're not, like, looking for good football all the time. You'd like to play good football and qualify for tournaments, but I think the bottom line is that we qualify for tournaments, and whatever manager, whether it be Martin O'Neill or whoever before him, Trapattoni, Brian Kerr, whoever before him, like, all they will be judged on ultimately is getting the tournaments, and then that's when the whole country goes bananas. That's when the soccer public, that's when the general public become even more attracted to the games. And the reality of it is that we were the fourth seed in this group and we finished second. And as you say, probably threw away winning the group. We probably should have won the group. Like, started so well. I think we got 10 points out of 12, then dropped some poor points in the middle of the campaign. Then obviously there's going away to Georgia and drawing and losing the home to Serbia. But in fairness to them, I mean, they had to go and win the two games. Although Moldova, you would say, yeah, you have to obviously be thinking we're going to beat Moldova comfortably enough. That Wales game was a really, really tough tie to finish it. Given what they've done over the last few years and the progress they've made and how good they were in the Euros and even in qualification, they weren't bad. But as I said, ultimately, the public and what Martin O'Neill in particular will be judged on is qualifying for tournaments. And if you qualify from a tournament when you're the fourth seed in the group, I mean, that's, in fairness, is a very good achievement.
The question we always hear, Kevin, though, is do Ireland have the calibre of player to play a more attractive style of football? I think it's fair to say during the recent European Championships, Ireland did play a good brand of football. They controlled a lot of the football against Sweden in the opening game, came away from that game feeling as though they dropped 2 points instead of earning one. Obviously, the game against Belgium didn't go to plan, but then against Italy, for large periods of the game, they outplayed the Italians, and obviously Wes Hoolihan should have put one away a couple of minutes before Robbie Brady famously scored. So, and then against France as well, the opening half, they outplayed France on home soil. They had a couple of chances to make it 2-0, didn't take it, and that's probably what cost Ireland in the end. So the question I'm going to ask you, Kevin, do Ireland have the players at their disposal right now to play a more attractive style of football if they were to choose to do so?
Yeah, I think so. I know I do. I have to say, as much as I'm saying about results and all, I do think that we have. I'm not saying we have world-class players. Like, we have very little players playing in top Premier League teams, which is probably the level that most of the choice are. We don't have any players playing in Europe. That would be,
should perhaps the managers of the national team, whoever they may be over the recent years and the coming years, should they be looking more to home, to the League of Ireland? Do you feel the standard is high enough for players? We obviously seen Sean Maguire go over, and he's had a great start to life at Preston, and there's so many other examples down the years. You've mentioned Wes Hoolihan, and obviously I could name a long list of many more names. Do you feel the current standard of the League of Ireland, would it be strong enough to put out international footballers?
I've spoken about myself before, that this whole magic playing thing, Sean Maguire didn't become an unbelievable player over the couple of months that he's been in Preston. I can understand that managers mightn't look to the league they might want to see them proving themselves at I have to say the championship would be a higher standard.
Oh, yeah.
It's fully professional football, and like, I mean, the league's still part-time teams in the league. That's not to say there's not players here that could play. Like, I'm sure if Patrick McElhinney was thrown into that Ireland team, he wouldn't look out of place. Like, there's no reason to say, like, we've seen it, like, the whole thing with Dundalk last year, we've seen them playing. Like, I mean, the teams that Dundalk played against in Europe last year were better than Moldova and probably half of the teams in our group. And they were more than able to equip themselves and play football and play an attractive brand of football and be comfortable on the ball. But you even mentioned earlier on, the message for them to go and do that didn't just come out of thin air. It came from their manager. And, like, he trusted them to be able to do it. And ultimately, looking at it then later on when Dundalk went out, when they were so comfortable playing that style of football, it sort of cost them in the end, where they were maybe trying to play a little bit too much when they were playing out from the back, and they end up getting caught, and that's what they end up going out of the group. So they could have qualified from the group stage, like, which is, again, talking about achievement, that would have been unbelievable. What they did already was unbelievable. To answer your question, I definitely think there's players there, and again, I'm not sticking up. I'm not here to promote Martin O'Neill. They do seem to be a lot more. Like I count on one hand, probably I count on one finger the amount of times an international manager was at any League of Ireland games when I was there. Bar Brian Kerr, which is fair enough because he was involved in the league and stuff. But I mean, like after Steve Staunton, Nick McCarthy, I don't think they would have looked at the League of Ireland. And at least maybe it's just, I don't know, for publicity purposes or for PR purposes that themselves and Roy Keane go to the games and they have staff like him, but they are there, like, in fairness, and it does bring a little bit more publicity to the league.
And of course it's an improvement on a manager saying there's no league in Ireland, as Trapattoni famously did.
There's a black and white situation. It's completely different, and as I said, the players are definitely there. I mean, and even the young players, but you do think that any time a player, look at Sean McGuire, that's the classic example. As soon as they do go away, they're more or less into the Ireland squad. And I mean, as I said, he probably improved in certain aspects of his game, but he hasn't turned into a completely different player that was playing in for Cork a couple of months ago. You know, so like the players are definitely there. I'm not saying there's 100 players or 50 players. There's a few players I think that could make the step up whilst playing here. But it does seem to be the way that they're just when they go away.
Yeah, so I'm just going to ask you now, Kevin, on our opposition in the playoffs, Denmark. I suppose everyone's going to pinpoint to Christian Eriksen, the yeah. Tottenham playmaker, as the main danger, but would it be dangerous to look at Denmark as a one-man team?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Look, he's their main man. Like, and he scored a few goals in the qualifying. Like, he would be the one, again, for us from Ireland, looking at the European games and the English game primarily. Like, he's the one that sticks out because he's playing for in a good sports side, and they've got goalkeepers, Michael, obviously, as we all know, Thomas Delaney, who's unfortunately sounds Irish, but he's not, playing for Werder Bremen. Like, he's a really good player for them, plays in midfield with Eriksen and sort of gives Eriksen the license to get forward and create stuff, although I think Delaney scored a hat trick against Armenia and won their game, so he's capable of getting goals as well. But again, the group they were in, I think it was Poland won it, then Montenegro, Romania, Armenia, Kazakhstan. It wasn't the toughest group that they had to negotiate to try and get into the playoffs in the first place. So again, going back to it, I think it was certainly the best draw. Well, it was on paper, it was the best draw. They were the lowest ranked of the seeded teams, like, albeit Croatia were only one point ahead of them. I certainly would have preferred them to get Croatia. I think the style of play that Croatia would have played would have done damage to us. But no, I think it's certainly a winnable tie. They're not a one-man team, but their main man is certainly. It'd be like, I mean, if you played Portugal, who would be being thinking of, you know? Like, if when there was talk of them being in it.
Yeah.
I think everyone's going to think straight away about Eriksen. But as I said, Delaney's a really, really good player. He's having a great season. Did well from Copenhagen before he even went to Germany. He really seemed like a good player. Said he can score goals as well, but he certainly frees up Eriksen to go and play, and he gets himself around the pitch very well as well.
And who do you feel will be Ireland's man to deal with Eriksen?
Well, I would have likened it to say Moyler, but you know, that's obviously not going to happen. The temptation would be maybe for Glenn Whelan to come back in. Mm. I don't think he should. You think Harry Arthur's probably played against him a few times this year, or over the last few years, and would have certain knowledge. The one good thing about Eriksen, the good of players he is, there'll be plenty of knowledge about him because everybody knows who he is and everybody knows his dangers. And if we can sort of, I wouldn't like, you'd nearly like, wouldn't mind losing one of our players just to cancel him out, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And play 10v10. Well, I said, if someone with the energy like Arthur maybe to get around, I'd like Moyler to do it, but obviously Moyler's not going to be available for the first leg, but he could be for the second leg, and second leg being at home will hopefully the tie will be still very much alive when we do come home.
Could that home advantage in the second leg be the deciding factor for you, Kevin?
Yeah, I think so. And having said that, I mean, we've been better away from home than we have been at home in the campaign. Like, I think we did 11 points away from home and only got 8 at the Aviva, so it's, you know, it sort of doesn't stack up there. But in these playoff ties, when you like a cup semi-final or whatever, you'd always, or a European tie, you'd always would favour being at home second, because you know what you have to do then, and you have your own support, and if you're like, it's, you're not, maybe with this Ireland team going away from home with something to hold, but I wouldn't have been necessarily confident of us beating them in the Aviva and then going away to try and hold on to something. I could see us getting something over there, and then knowing what we have to do coming home, and then obviously there'd be probably a bit more pressure on Ireland being at home, but I definitely think it's worked out in our favour that we're at home in the second leg.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you that a big factor could be knowing what you have to do going into that second leg. I said it myself on last week's show, ahead of the Wales game, the Moldova and the Wales game, that if Ireland were going into that game in Cardiff knowing that other results had gone their way, so Scotland and England doing them a favour, that Ireland probably could do the job against Wales, and that's how it turned out to be. So I think, yeah, as you said there, go away and secure a good result, bring it home to the Aviva, place will be rocking, and hopefully the result will go Ireland's way.
Yeah, well, there's one thing you can't take away from this Irish side, is that when they know that they have to go and win a game, generally they've gone and done it. And they've known that they had to put in a big performance, they've gone and done it. Like, you go back to Italy, you talk about Wales, you talk about Germany, the Aviva. They have pulled it out, and sometimes, as you say, when you're relying on other teams and you're waiting to see what if, and if they score and they beat them or whatever, like, it's out of your hands. It's that bit of uncertainty. But when you have that clarity of mind and vision of what you really, really need to do. In fairness to this Irish side, they as I said, they've done it on numerous occasions, and hopefully, as I said, it'll be alive and clear in their minds exactly what they have to go and do, and they can do it down in the Aviva.
Kevin, it's been a pleasure having you on, but we couldn't let you go. A man of great League of Ireland experience, as I said in my introduction, so I have to ask you for your views on the league at the moment. Obviously, this interview has been pre-recorded ahead of tonight's show. And tonight is, of course, the night where Cork City can finally, after 12 years, claim the league title with a draw at home to Derry. Do you feel tonight is the night that Cork City do that?
Yeah, well, it seems like 12 years since they should have had a won, to be honest. Yeah. It's so strange. Never in a million years would I have thought that we'd still be sitting here. I wanted the 17th of October saying, will they clinch it tonight? Because I genuinely thought the thing was over in June or July, like, you know, and ultimately, they will probably still win the league by a good few points. Do I think they'll do it tonight? Yeah, when this probably goes out, could be proven wrong, but I can't see Derry beating them at home. Obviously, Derry's both teams' preparations have been disrupted, like, but I just don't. I think they've been better the last few weeks. I know, probably looking at the Bowls game the other night, probably should have won us, definitely should have had a penalty, and then they go on. Scored that, who knows, if someone could have saved it or whatever, you just don't know. But I'd be very surprised if they don't win it tonight, and I'd be absolutely flabbergasted if they don't win it. There's two games after tonight to get a point. I think they should be away. If they don't, it would be the worst collapse of all time, I think. But in fairness, I'm just on the other side, but I would say fairness to Dundalk, they've been sensational over the last few months. God, winning games and all he needed was for Dundalk to slip up, and it would have been done anyway. So they have certainly. I can't say they've put them under tremendous pressure, because they're too far. They've been too far away to do that. It's not as if they were one win behind or something. They were so far behind that they had to keep winning these games. But even as I said, the fact that it's still alive is a credit to Dundalk as much as it is a little bit against Cork, you know. But I think they will, yeah. I think tonight will be the night.
Obviously, it'll be a great success for Cork if they can finally claim the title tonight, but obviously there's been a huge dip in form since Sean Maguire has left. As you've said, it seems so long that they've been trying to wrap this title up, so even if they are to claim the title, and let's say, for example, the cup final doesn't go their way against their arch-rivals Dundalk, you know, will there be a lot of people saying this was a one-man team success, all thanks to Maguire, and maybe taking a little bit of the shine off things?
Yes, for a player, you win the league. You don't care. I won it three times. I'm lucky enough to win it three times with Shells, and I don't care. We won way we won it. We won it whether we won it with a game to go, with two games to go. We were never in a position to win it with 10 games to go or whatever Cork were. But it's certainly, look, the Sean McGuire factor is, he's still the top scorer in the league. Yeah. Which tells its own story, but they certainly have struggled without him. They've changed, they've tried so many different centre forwards there. Shepherd's played there, Conor Ellis has played there, even Kilhan has played there.
Sadly, or Campion has played.
Like, they haven't been able to reproduce what they were able to do with Sean McGuire. I would say Kevin O'Connor gone was, I think Griffin stepped in and done very well left back, so it wasn't a massive one. But obviously, the main thing was the goals, and they haven't. I don't think they've scored two goals in the game since he left, which is unbelievable because they've. I mean, they were blowing teams away earlier in the season, and you think back to that game up in Dundalk. I think I don't know. No, it might have been the second last game we scored a hat trick, and he was just sensational. But again, go back to what we were talking about earlier on. He is that good of a player that. Any team, I mean, if you took him out of any team, I mean, probably if they're taking out a Preston team now, they're going to struggle, and they're up in the top end of the championship. Like, they were always going to struggle with it. I was a bit surprised, I'll be honest, that they hadn't pre-planned for and had for centre forward. I know Sadler came in, but Sadler had been playing on the left, and he's yeah. more of a wide man. But they did try him up top as well, but it didn't really look as good. But my own thoughts about the time was they're definitely going to go and get someone. And then when they didn't, I looked at the table and I think they were probably 15, 16 points ahead at the time. And I thought, well, maybe they've thought, look, it's done here. We don't need to go out and spend money on someone for the rest of the season. We'll win the league and then we'll have a look at it then and see what's available to us then. So if they go and win the league, fair enough, it's worked. And look, they will win the league. The Cup, on the other hand, I think is a different matter. I think, as I just spoke about, Dundalk are in such good form that I would certainly be fancying Dundalk to go and beat them in the Cup final. The way they're both playing at the moment, it was certainly, I think anybody would think Dundalk would be too strong for them at the moment.
Yeah, the only thing, Dundalk suffering with a lot of injuries at the moment, and yeah. After playing a Titanic semi-final two-legged event when they went to a replay against Shamrock Rovers, and obviously the cup finals between Dundalk and Cork have been very, very cagey. They haven't been great spectacles in all honesty, but I think a lot of people seem to feel the same way as you do there, Kevin, that Dundalk are going to go into this one as favourites.
Yeah, I would think so. Barron, like, I mean, what's the three games ago? They could lose the last three games and then Cork win their last three games. You think Dundalk are suddenly the form side. But I just think the way it's shaping up at the moment, albeit we're still, what, 3 weeks away from the cup final.
Yeah.
So it's like, things could change. Dundalk could have all their players. They could have lose players. Cork could lose players. You just don't know. Probably a bit early to call it. But if they're playing each other tonight, you would strongly be fancying Dundalk.
Kevin, it's been an absolute pleasure. We want to thank you for joining us on the show and we'll speak to you again soon.
No problem, Kieran. Thanks a lot.
So great to hear from Kevin Daugherty, I have to say, a man who was very generous with his time to myself and John here on the podcast at the start of the season during his assistant manager role at Longford Town. So once again, thanks to Kevin, who was more than generous with his time in speaking to us. And John, I'd just love to get your thoughts on the playoff draw. Everyone said that Denmark and Switzerland were the two sides that probably were the most profitable draws for Ireland. Denmark is the one we got, and the second leg, crucially, comes at home in the Aviva.
You should be delighted, because I mean that's the crucial thing for me, is that the second leg's at home. So, yeah.
And with Ireland's away record this year, they haven't lost a game away from home in the campaign. So you'd imagine if they can get a good result away, maybe pick up an away goal, bring it back to the Aviva, the place is going to be rocking. Pre-sale tickets sold out in 7 minutes today. It's quite an incredible bandwagon, I have to say. So the place is going to be rocking, and I really do think Ireland, this is going to be their best possible chance to get to a first World Cup since 2002.
For me, you avoided the two big ones. You avoided Italy, you avoided Croatia.
Yeah.
Northern Ireland got Switzerland, which I think, even though Switzerland the highest ranking team left, didn't it? I think that's a great draw for them.
Yeah, only slipped up in their final group game, had won every other group game up until then, so, you know, an underestimated opponent.
Yeah, we've to, but even so, I still think that's a good draw for the North, and the Denmark draw, it's as good as it could have got. You could have done with your man Christian Eriksen injured, couldn't you?
Well, as a Spurs fan, it was a great result for Tottenham last night against Real Madrid, but you know, my allegiance is lie elsewhere, so if we could pick up a little hamstring injury here or there in the next few weeks.
Look, you know, I'm gonna wish them all the best, Ireland, in those two matches. Come and join us in Russia.
As long as you're not fighting the Russians again.
I'm not fighting anybody, trust me.
Especially with that knee.
Exactly. I can't run away neither. That's my problem now.
Folks, that's been episode 16 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Want to thank everyone for joining us again this week. Great to get back on track after a week off. So as always, just going to give a little shout out for the way you can listen in. Search Between the Stripes LOI podcast on iTunes, give us a subscription and a review if you feel you're enjoying the content so far this season. We're on Audioboom, so again, just search for Between the Stripes LOI podcast. We're on Pocket Cast and Podcast Republic, so that's for all you Android users out there, and you can get every single episode from the very beginning on Mixcloud. So loads of ways to find us, and of course we're on Twitter at Between Stripes, and we're on Facebook Between the Stripes, so be sure to check us out. I want to thank everyone that's listened in, and also a massive thank you to the several people I bumped into in Cardiff that said they were avid listeners to the show, and some very kind words from a lot of Ireland fans from all over the country. So that's always great to hear. We'll see you next week, folks, and thanks very much. And once again, huge congratulations to Cork City, the champions of Ireland for 2017.
Don't forget, subscribe on iTunes or alternatively follow us on Audioboom, Mixcloud, Pocket Casts or Podcast Republic and never miss an episode. See you next week.